This is a pre-pod listener announcement. Today's podcast will contain much talk of the Cowboys' chances without quarterback Tony Romo. We understand that they have now traded for Matt Cassel. This does not affect the conversation in any way. In the immortal words of Simon Clancy, a fifth-round pick for that useless house. It's Matt Cassel. No one cares. Welcome to the Gridiron Show in association with Sports Travel Tours. And what a bizarre week two that was. I don't know about you, but I went about four picks correct in my picks. And I think everyone else was the same. And we've got some ridiculous stats all about the weekend. So we're going to look back at the week two. We're going to talk about which of you 0-2 teams should be concerned, which of you shouldn't worry yet, and which of those teams who got a surprise win this weekend have some optimism for the future. This is the Gridiron Show. Will Gavin in the studio, Ollie Hunter down the line. How are you doing today, sir?
Will, I'm fine. How are you?
Yeah, very well, mate. Very well indeed. As I say, it was a bizarre week two. A week two I didn't necessarily enjoy, but a week two I got on with, and we've got loads to talk about from it.
Will,
so that's
did
fine.
You not enjoy it because of fantasy reasons?
No, I had great fantasy weekend. Of my six leagues I do, other than our charity leagues, I won in five of them.
Okay, I lost in four out of my five.
And in our fancy ones, I think we were 2-2.
Okay.
Which is fine.
So why didn't you enjoy it then?
I don't know. It was just so stressful. It was all so messy. There was some terrible football played. We'll talk about, very shortly, we're going to have Simon Clancy joining us on the line to talk about the Monday night football game. He's also going to talk to us about the Seahawks and the Packers and his Miami Dolphins and their loss to the Jaguars. And actually, at this point in the game, I have a new feature I'd like to introduce, Ollie Hunter.
Ooh.
It's called the most overused stat of the week! Okay, I used the Ollie Hunter's Rookie of the Week song for it, and I'm sorry about that. We've had two people say to us about Ollie Hunter's Rookie of the Week on Twitter. We should bring it back, man.
Definitely not.
But, ouch. But the most overused stat of the week. We'll find some way to do something sexier for it. Week one, just so you know, if we had done it, the most overused stat of the week would have been, well, in the 2014 season, only four PATs were missed. We've already seen four PATs missed in week one.
Okay.
This week, the most overused stat of the week, it is a cracker, but I have heard it absolutely everywhere, that Sunday was the first time ever that the Oakland Raiders, the Jacksonville Jaguars,
yeah, I have heard this,
the Cleveland Browns, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the Washington Redacteds all won on the same day.
You know what the overused stat for 2014-15 would be?
Would it be that the Kansas City Chiefs didn't have that?
You are utterly right. And by the end of the year, it will probably be the same stat again that will be used.
Based on how it's gone so far, that is very much a possibility. But we've got loads of questions coming on Twitter. We'll be speaking to Simon Clancy very shortly. We'll give you our views on the games from the weekend. Just a bit of corporate shilling, as always, because we need to do that. Gridiron-magazine.com. Somebody in our pick'ems picked 11 games correct this week in order to win the overall and to win the new era hat. So, you know, there are going to be weeks like this when you're going to have a chance to win, and there's a season-long game as well. So gridiron-magazine.com and go check out your picks there. You can also subscribe. We've been putting together the new edition of the magazine ready for Wembley week. It's so exciting that next week we're going to see our first London game. And later on this week, you're going to hear our chat with Mike Tannenbaum, the vice executive director of player personnel for the Miami Dolphins, which I think essentially makes him GM, but shh, he's got a fancier name. So we speak to Mike Tannenbaum later this week and ahead of their game at Wembley. That's going to be a really exciting interview. And all of that's worked its way into the magazine as well. So get online, subscribe. There's a big piece on Ndamukong Suh and on the Dolphins before they come over to London. And obviously the very exciting New York Jets.
Ho, 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 it's magic.
Fitz magic, you know. Whoa!
I absolutely loved watching the Jets this gone weekend. And, should we kick off? So this is how, sorry, Ollie, I was going to tell you, this is how I want to break down the show.
Okay, yep, good. I love this live telling me what we're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm telling the listeners as well, but technically I'm telling you at the same time. We're going to break down the teams who are 0-2 so far.
Sure.
Which of them should be a little bit concerned and which of them shouldn't have any worries? We're going to talk about the Colts and the Seahawks with Simon Clancy, and then you and I can break down the rest of them. We're then going to have a quick look at the teams that won this weekend as a surprise and just say, have any of them got any optimism? It can be a one-line answer. That's absolutely fine. We'll sweep up the rest of the games, and we need to talk about injured quarterbacks, of course.
Okay.
Because next weekend we could see a McCown car full of quarterbacks. Not one, but both McCown brothers could be starting in the NFL next weekend. Ridiculous. Ollie, is there anything you'd like to discuss before we get on Simon Clancy and start talking about the
games?
No,
let's get into Clancy. Of course, Green Bay are wonderful, but no, let's hear Clancy's view on Green Bay's victory over the Seahawks.
So joining us on the line, we're breaking down today's show, as we've explained, into little nuggets, little sections, and to talk
vignettes.
To us. Vignettes. Little yes. Vignettes. What a lovely way of putting it.
Thank you.
Simon, how are you, sir?
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, very well, mate, very well indeed. We're going to be talking about teams which are 0-2, who should be concerned and should not be concerned. We're also going to be talking about of the teams that won on Sunday in shock wins, which those actually has some proper optimism for the season. And so that's going to cover a couple of games you watched this weekend, Simon.
Yes.
I didn't want to lead.
That wasn't really a question.
It wasn't. I was just trying to lead into you talking about the Jags. But we'll get on to that in a minute. Let's start off with Monday Night Football. As Ryan Fitzmagic, and I enjoyed it so much, I got this.
Ho, Fitzmagic!
The Amish gunslinger does it again.
Through two touchdown passes as the Jets defense forced five turnovers on Monday night to give New York a 20-7 victory at Indianapolis. The Jets are 2-0 for the first time in the last four seasons, whereas the Colts are one of our teams who are wondering, 0-2, should they be worried? Now, they started 0-2 last year, and they ended up running the table in the AFC South, winning it with no problem. From what you saw last night, should the Colts be actually concerned, Simon Clancy?
Yes, absolutely. They're a bad team. That was a bad game between two bad teams, but the Colts should really be worried. Like you said, they were 0-2 last year, but look at these numbers. Last year, Andrew Luck started when they were 0-2. He was 63.2% completion percentage, five touchdowns, three picks, and an 85% quarterback rating. This year, 54% completion percentage, three touchdowns, five picks, and just a 57% rating. Luck is going backwards this year. I think he's entering into the bracket of, he's going from media darling, covering up some of his errors, into actually a quarterback that's regressing, and regressing quite quickly. I mean, he just continues to make stupid, stupid mistakes. I mean, 28 turnovers since the start of 2014 he's committed. That's the most in the NFL by a decent distance. And what I thought was quite interesting after the game was that Chuck Pagano essentially just chucked him under the bus and began to start saying, you know, actually, it isn't that tough to do what he's not doing. It's not trigonometry, is what he said. and he kind of, I wonder whether that was a dig at, you know, Luck's university, you know, what course he did in, I know he didn't do trigonometry, but he did something very similar, he needs some mechanical engineering or something.
Yeah, he's supposedly very intelligent because of that. But is there any feeling that, you know, they faced the Bills, and we know how the Bills performed this week, but a very, very good Bills defense. A Jets defense who, over two games now, have 10 turnovers and 31 points from those turnovers, which is, just to put that into perspective, they managed 13 turnovers the entire of last season and only took 20 points off those. Bar the Broncos, who they face kind of mid-November, they've probably faced their two best defenses of the season already. Is there any feeling that with the Titans, Jags, Texans as their next three games, that when they go 3-2 and Luck throws 15 touchdowns over the next three games, we're going to go, fine, it was all fine?
Yeah, I mean, but apparently he didn't have a very good camp, didn't have a very good preseason, and has now carried that over into... It would be a concern. Another concern would be Pep Hamilton, the offensive coordinator, who's just not very good.
Oh, the play calling was all over the shop.
It was horrendous. I mean, you know, Liam Blackburn made the point earlier on that he threw more passes, or he called more passes to the tackle-eligible Joe Wright than to either Kobe Fleener or Ollie's MVP, Dwayne.
that's looking good now, isn't it?
MVP, Dwayne Allen. Which is kind of that flushing noise that you can hear in the background. I just want to give you this quote as well. It was in the local Indianapolis newspaper about Philip Dorsett. Dorsett is a more athletic Hakeem Nicks, which means he's clueless about where to go, but at least he gets wherever he's not supposed to be quicker. which is beyond genius. That's the greatest.
Oh,
quote.
That's very funny. But
the whole thing, the game was low key. I was amazed at how many empty seats there were in the stadium. There was no real atmosphere. It didn't sound like Lucas Oil Stadium or the dome in its previous incarnation. There was just a really weird atmosphere, and I just
When we're talking about the play calling in particular, I was caught out on Twitter last night. I had a classic Twitter flashy moment where they nearly lost the fumble on the short yardage situation at the goal line.
Yeah.
And I tweeted out in anger, "That's what happens when you don't run Frank Gore in short yardage situations." One snap later, Frank Gore goes and spills it on the line.
I mean, to me, it shouldn't just be running him in short, you know. I know that there were holding penalties that, you know, and people will say, well, clearly he got 12 yards and 14 yards and 9 yards but actually a couple of those holding penalties were fairly ticky-tack. There was one on Anthony Costanzo that, you know, I think Gore ripped off about 14, 15 yards and it came back. And you kind of thought, actually, you see that pretty much on every play. I would be feeding Gore an awful lot more than I am. And just getting the ball to get the ball to the tight end. If your elaborate deep passing game, which just essentially seems like luck, just chucking it up into double coverage. I mean, he could have been picked off four or five times in that game.
One of the things I was most shocked about is when you say that is what he was good at in previous seasons. And one of the things which I think is causing a lot of the issues with the turnovers and a lot of the issues with him holding onto the ball too long is that when he needed to, he so often got the ball out into the flats, found the tight ends behind the line of scrimmage, found the running back in the passing game, and he had no problem checking the ball down, and we had no problem with it either because it was better ball protection and they were winning games. But I just...
Absolutely.
I'm stunned. I genuinely think that this is a clear out coming this year.
I think Pagano's done.
I think Pagano's done. And I think Gregson might be the most overrated executive in the league.
Absolutely.
Now, he was... We've talked about this on the show before, but he won Executive of the Year in what was obviously a very, very difficult year. You know, losing your head coach to cancer and then having somebody else come in who hadn't head coached for how many years it was and all of that. And he did brilliantly in the situation, but he's not drafted well. He's not done well in free agency. I saw some stats about their O-line. They've over 50 games... Andrew Luck has had 9 different starting right guards.
Yeah, I saw they put up the graphic, didn't they? I think Costanzo's played has been the only left tackle he's ever had. I think 9 different left guards, 6 different centres, 6 different right guards, and 6 different right tackles. But actually, you know, if that's the situation with your offensive line, do something about it, i.e., get better players, or your offensive coordinator has to become more creative. You know, look at and whilst the Packers have the one of the better offensive lines in the game, with Brian Bulaga down and Don Barkley coming in and playing tackle, what Tom Clements does so well is that he manipulates the pocket because Rodgers just moves out of the pocket. And not only does it buy his receivers more time, but it also helps his linemen. Obviously, there are some times when his linemen think that perhaps he's going to be dropping back on a normal 5 or 7 step drop and then throwing. And that in itself, the movement in itself, brings about different nuances to how they block and how they use their hips when they're doing so. But if they know about this, because clearly these are predetermined plays, but they know that Rodgers is going to take a 3-step drop out of the pistol, perhaps roll to his right, buy some more time, it helps the rest of it. Let's say he rolls to the right, you're putting more pressure, I suppose, on the right guard and the right tackle. But for the center, the left guard and the left tackle, they have it slightly easier because the people they are blocking and are significantly further away from the quarterback than... Do you know what I mean? If he was standing
directly
under center.
Yeah.
And you just think, just be more creative. Be more creative. You know, get little bubble screens to Hilton and to Dorsett. Use those tight ends. I mean, to me, it's just, astonishing. And back to the Ryan Grigson point, I mean, as much of a fan as I think most of us were about Philip Dorsett, to completely ignore that defense, essentially, that just got beasted, in the AFC Championship game, just absolutely run over. To draft a toy wide receiver and not get a few big space eaters on that defensive line just defies belief. I think that's actually, it's
When you've already gone out and spent on receivers, and Dante Moncrief
absolutely
looked impressive last night, and you've already got him in the building. We could go on about that for hours.
We could.
But just a tiny bit of love for the Jets, because they're a team we're going to talk about over the next few weeks, is that that defense is as good as I just mentioned it was. They have had those 10 turnovers. They face an Eagles team who were just dreadful this week. Next weekend, they could be coming to London 3-0. And absolutely, so Jets fans, you have something to be excited about at the moment.
What they do is they play exactly what the Colts don't do, which is they play to their strengths. They disavow their weaknesses and they play to their strengths in that they don't try and exceed what they're not capable of doing. Ryan Fitzpatrick is not Aaron Rodgers, but they allow him to play within the specific nature of the system. They use Brandon Marshall a lot. They manipulate. They just do what they do best because they accept the restrictions of the people that they have. And I would say also that David Harris is arguably one of the most underrated players in the NFL. I'll just chuck that out there as well.
Nice, good. He's a guy we gave a lot of love to when they re-signed him.
Good player.
We know that Rex really wanted him over in Buffalo, so
they did
well to re-sign him. Let's move on then and talk about the late game Sunday night in another 0-2 team who admittedly have had a more difficult run of it in the opening two games, but as Aaron Rodgers throws for two touchdowns and looked sublime. The Packers outlasted the Seahawks for a 27-17 win on Sunday night in a rematch of last season's NFC title game. The 10-play, 80-yard scoring drive capped with the 5-yard pass to Richard Rodgers was just ridiculous. And then Jayron Elliott, a guy who I genuinely had barely heard of, undrafted last year, made a lunging one-handed interception from a short pass from Russell Wilson with 7 minutes left and essentially killed off the game. Same question, Seahawks 0-2, do they need to be concerned?
Not at all. That's the two toughest games on their schedule now out of the way.
Well, they've still got to come to Levi's. Okay, I'll stop.
That's the two toughest games in the schedule out of the way. No, I think there were definite signs, certainly in the second half, there were definite signs that the Seahawks were getting back on track. They found a rhythm by using Wilson's feet, which they don't particularly like to do. They need to get Jimmy Graham into the lineup a bit, into the play calling a little bit more. They're obviously hamstrung by the fact that, and I've said this all along, they're hamstrung by the fact they don't have decent receivers, and they really don't. You're asking Russell Wilson to do an awful lot, essentially using the threat of Marshawn Lynch, the threat of Jimmy Graham, and a lot sort of short and underneath. But he showed in the second half why he's such a good player. And, Jerron Elliott made those two huge plays, but Wilson is essentially driving to tie the game in Lambeau, before Elliott makes his one-handed interception. And at that point, you're thinking the Packers are a pretty decent team. The Seahawks are, have pretty much lived with them for the entire duration of the game. I know they've been behind, they were never ahead. But I wouldn't have a particular concern. My concern would be about the strength on the perimeter in terms of wide receivers. And it begins to look to me a little bit like Marshawn Lynch is kind of over the other side of the mountain.
I was starting to really feel that on Sunday night, I have to say. I think he struggled in the game last weekend. Again, a big splashy run making his overall stats look a lot better. If you take out his two longest runs over those two games, which I know is slightly unfair, but if you take out the 11-yard run on Sunday and the 25-yard run the Sunday before, then his average yards per carry have been 2.2 and 1.3. That's not Marshawn Lynch, even against a weak offensive line, as we know the Seahawks have lost pieces on that line. But I had some concern about Marshawn Lynch. I think he'll come up against easier teams this year and get some bigger numbers, but I certainly think he's on the receding end.
I think give the Packers credit. They stayed lane discipline in terms of looking at, and Chris Collinsworth kept bringing it up, and he was exactly right that they kept lane discipline in terms of those backside cuts that Lynch likes to do, which is where he picks up. He's got such excellent field vision, which is where he picks up his extra yardage. He's cutting back against the grain when he's, made his first initial moves, and especially when Wilson does that great job of ball handling and whether or not he's going to keep it on the kind of the read option plays. When Lynch cuts back against the grain in those read options, which is often where he picks up his biggest yardage, the Packers, either Julius Peppers or the linebackers, especially Clay Matthews, who was very, very active throughout the game, they just did a really good job of sort of keeping him, funneling him back inside towards where BJ Raji looks a completely different guy. Mike Daniels had a good game. Dayton Jones showed up. McNeil had a good game. They all, you know, that was a strong effort from that front seven of the Packers. But I don't think Seattle have too much to be concerned about.
I still think, we understand the deal with Cam Chancellor is closer to being done. I think one of them's got to blink eventually.
Yeah.
But that secondary certainly needs the help. They've given up 71.7. percent completion on all passing so far, and are yet to get an interception this season, which I know two games, sometimes you can go a two-game stretch without a turnover, but it's not very Seahawks-esque to do that. And they tried to change it up after Deion Bailey had a bit of a nightmare last week. It still didn't quite work, but actually, you're in Lambeau Field. Aaron Rodgers hasn't given up 554 straight passing attempts without an interception in Lambeau. So it's kind of it's difficult to use that as the example play there. Seahawks fans, let's not stress out
I think there are other 0-2 teams that have far more to be concerned about than Seattle. So.
And the other thing one that we're going to talk about today, before we mop everything else up, we're going to talk about the surprise wins of the weekend, and undoubtedly one of the biggest shocks, which led to our average across the Gridiron guys in terms of picks in our Pick'em League on gridiron-magazine.com to be about 5 games this weekend. And that was Blake Bortles turning in some preseason form and leading a game-winning drive for the Jacksonville Jaguars at home to the Miami Dolphins.
Shambolic. I mean, kudos to the Jags. They had to get, you know, Gus Bradley's clearly got that team playing, and Bortles was, you know, whether or not he is that good or whether or not he was just made to look that good. But they had a great game plan called. They made use of big Allen Robinson against Miami's smaller corners, especially Bryce McCain, who's kind of been forced to start on the perimeter instead of the nickel where he was in Pittsburgh. And, you know, they had an excellent game plan. They were slightly helped by that sort of contentious decision before halftime where they mismarked play where they came, a guy came on and kicked a 58-yard field goal when actually it seemed that it should have been a 61-yarder. But and they mismarked the ball, which essentially the game came down to 3 points. So, you know, and it also hit the upright as it went over. So, you know, you have to wonder whether or not what impact that had. But, you know, the Dolphins have absolutely no excuses. I think it's more kudos to the Jags. And they were just, you know, the Dolphins were suffering. They lost quite a lot of players injury-wise. Cameron Wake, I think, only played 14 snaps. Jordan Cameron started really strong again, then had a groin injury, went out.
I know you say that Cameron Wake has had some injuries, and you mentioned Sue again there, but how concerned are you by the lack of sacks against a team who gave up a lot of them last year in the Jags, when you've got Sue, you've got Wake, you've got Olivier Vernon?
Hugely concerned. I mean, I think Olivier Vernon is one of the most overrated players in the AFC, personally. You know, he can't set the edge, and I think he's getting an incredible sort of single piggyback off the fact that Cameron Wake is such a good pass rusher. Wake is clearly not close to, you know, his get off is usually electric, and he just can't burst off because he's carrying this injury. There's been reports. Adam Beasley of the Miami Herald reported that Ndamukong Suh was freelancing. That's been denied by the Dolphins. There's some rumors that perhaps it Will Davis, who's just been traded to the Ravens, was talking to the press about some of the issues that were going on. Davis has been a bit disgruntled. And was almost traded when the roster cuts came down. There's all sorts of interesting and slightly weird things going on behind the scenes with the Dolphins. But, you know, there's a number of injuries that are a concern. But I think the biggest concern would be the fact that they just simply cannot protect Ryan Tannehill, and they can't open any lanes up for Lamar Miller. And essentially, they ruined what was one of Tannehill's best career games, not just in terms of numbers, but just in terms of passing placement. He threw two or three balls that if it had been Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, you know, media would have gone into meltdown. And I know I'm biased, but they sort of ruined what was one of his better performances. And I think, it much like with the Colts, I think that regardless of what Mike Tannenbaum says, it will be playoffs or bust for Joe Philbin. And the fact that they summarily failed to tighten up that offensive line, specifically those two guard positions, where Dallas Thomas is probably the worst starting guard in the NFL, and he's getting abused play after play after play. I mean, absolutely abused. Tannehill was pretty badly hurt in the locker room after the game, walking very, very gingerly. That would be a concern. But kudos to the Jags. They outcoached the Dolphins. They outplayed the Dolphins. Miami made Robinson look, you know, like Larry Fitzgerald, and made Bortles look like Joe Montana. So, you know, I think they get what they deserve. Hopefully, as a Dolphins fan, that it will be a bit of a wake-up call to the Dolphins who, you know, face a tough AFC East game against the Bills this weekend in Miami.
Right, I've allowed you to get your rant off. Thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Clancy. Always a joy.
I didn't even rant about Henry Anderson.
No.
Save that for another week.
Yeah, I did want to talk to you about Henry Anderson, but we're running slightly long. A guy,
no
Colts
worries,
fans
man.
Getting very excited about him. You didn't rate
they
him
shouldn't.
That highly. Let's tease that just a little bit, and we'll get onto that another week when we see how much more they can gain any sort of pass rush whatsoever. But
look forward to it.
Simon, always a pleasure. Have a good evening,
cheers,
sir.
Cheers, pal.
Cheers, buddy.
Thanks, Will. Bye, mate. Bye.
Simon Clancy there. Always a joy to speak with him. Ollie, was there anything you wanted to add to what Simon had to say?
He's wrong. And it leads very nicely onto the 0-2 teams. I think the Seahawks have good reason to be worried. Marshawn Lynch, you guys both spoke about how he doesn't look anywhere near the kind of, not anywhere near, but he doesn't look the Marshawn Lynch of last season or the season before that. And also Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham just seems like an average tight end. They only used him once. I think it was one reception for 11 yards. He was meant to be brought in as this new great Jimmy Graham hope that would bring this offensive red zone weapon for Seattle, and they haven't used him, or they barely used him whatsoever. The offensive line does not look great, although Green Bay only could manage two sacks against Seattle. I think there's a lot to be worried about Seattle. Cam Chancellor, the hole left by Cam Chancellor on the defense is gargantuan, and we saw that exposed. The lack of ingenuity from the Seattle defensive coach is worrying. Not blitzing Aaron Rodgers once was a ridiculous idea. Okay, he's great over the top with limited coverage, and the Seattle coverage isn't great, but you still got to put pressure on the guy. I think there's a lot to be worried about with Seattle.
Yeah, I've stated my concerns while we were speaking to Clancy. I don't think you're wrong, but I think they have faced two of their toughest games of the year. I think Clancy is right there, and I think they'll get the Cam Chancellor deal done as soon as possible, and I still think they'll be fine. However, the one area that I would be concerned if I was them is the idea that they've got an opportunity at winning the NFC West, because my man crush of a team, despite them being in the same team as the division that I support, I have two man crushes this year. One of them failed on Thursday night. But the Arizona Cardinals, Carson Palmer threw for four touchdowns. David Johnson became the first player in something like, I think Jim Brown was the last one to do it in the 60s, became the first player with his first three touches in the NFL to all be touchdowns. A kick return, a reception, and a proper rushing touchdown. Then the Bears lost Jay Cutler. The Bears are 0-2, which leads us nicely to talk about that game. I just very quickly want to say, loving the Cardinals' work so far. I think they are very, very strong favourites in my mind for the NFC West with this two-game lead. But talking about 0-2 teams, was there really ever any hope for the Chicago Bears?
No, they're rubbish. Move on.
Just to say, the defence has surrendered 79 points in two games, both of those at home, and Jay Cutler is now out for at least 2 weeks.
Actually, Will Gavin, I think that's the only positive that you can get from it. Jay Cutler is out, and that's got to be a good thing because he's been absolutely terrible.
Did you watch Jimmy Clausen?
Also terrible, okay.
And they go to Seattle this week. So that Seattle defense, which has been struggling so bad, well done, you're going to get about 15 turnovers this coming week.
0-3, baby. I want to maybe chuck in a hysterical lane.
Oh,
not even that. It's a, what's it called? Let's get hysterical.
Go.
The NFC North could see an unbeaten team and a winningless team.
You think they could have a 16-0 team and an 0-16 team?
It could happen. It does sound slightly hysterical, but if you think about it, it's hysterical.
It's pretty hysterical, my friend. Moving on to the next 0-2 team, because I just wanted to cover them off very quickly. There are kind of a couple of other teams who really, before we get onto the ones that look a real mess, who you kind of hope that these ones might not be in too bad of a situation. And the first is the New York Football Giants. They lost 24-20 to the Atlanta Falcons, our pick for the NFC South this year. Julio Jones went absolutely off again. His 37-yard pass from Matt Ryan, which set up Devontae Freeman's 2-yard touchdown run to win the game. He was absolutely unstoppable. 13 receptions, 135 yards. Just a ridiculous game overall. The Giants, however, they're 0-2. playing in, having had two 10-digit leads in the fourth quarter. They've been double digits ahead in two consecutive games. But I look around the rest of their division and I say, well, let's see what's going to happen with the Eagles. But I'm not. I don't think that Washington are going anywhere. The Cowboys are now going to have to hand the ball over to Brandon Weeden. I think the Giants have every chance of bouncing back and still doing very well in this division this year. They have looked good in both games. They've just lost in a silly situation. Odell Beckham going off this weekend was massive for them. I think that they will be fine. I'm not saying they're going to win a Super Bowl or anything, but I just think that they're... The 0-2 slightly lies about the quality of the team.
Yeah, as much as I'd like to bash on the Giants, I think you're right. Eli Manning missed two really quite easy throws in that fourth quarter, one to Larry Donnell, where it would have brought the Giants back into it. And, they've got too much on offense for them to be too worried about it, losing those two games in that final quarter. So, yeah, I wouldn't worry too much if I were a Giants fan. Perhaps Eli needs to get into finding his receivers a little bit more. But, yeah, I think Giants will be okay.
Good. I'm glad you agree with me. All right, so let's move on and talk about an 0-2 team who... Four out of the five of us, maybe three out of the five of us, picked as our AFC North winners this year. I'm not suggesting we write them off just yet, but when you go into Oakland and you allow a team to put 37 points on a defense that you've got, I think people had a lot of love for in the preseason, as Derek Carr threw a 12-yard touchdown pass to Seth Roberts.
Who?
whilst... beating the Baltimore Ravens 37 points to 33. Carr threw for 351 yards and three touchdowns, despite the late interception. I don't understand what the Ravens were doing at the weekend.
I mean, what are the Ravens? What do they do? Because it was about their defense. They don't have that. It was about their running back. Ray Rice is gone. Justin Forsett isn't doing anything. They don't have any receivers. And we go back to the defense. They lost to Oakland. I mean, what are the Ravens doing at the moment?
My only thought is that they don't like traveling out west. They've got a terrible record against the AFC West. I think they're 0-5 in their last five against teams from that division. Terrell Suggs' injury is a huge blow.
Massive, massive blow.
Especially for a team that got rid of Haloti Ngata. Is it a tough division? The Bengals have had a very impressive start, and we will get on and talk about their game in a little while. I just don't know with the Ravens. I think they've still reasons to be optimistic, but I'm not really sure what they are. I feel like they should be, but maybe I'm just getting overexcited because they're a team I did like before the season.
I mean, the thing that actually that we thought would be okay for them this season would be their defense, and the thing that we thought that they would struggle on would be their offense. Joe Flacco, okay, he had an okay game. Two touchdowns, 384 yards. Steve Smith, Steve Smith Sr., he's 61. 150-yard game.
Grandpa Steve Smith.
Exactly. He's 150-yard game. They've got Kamal Aiken in the game. Crockett Gilmore as well, two touchdowns. Great for a tight end there. The running game, okay. Taliaferro got a touchdown. Justin Forsett is not setting the world alight. The offense isn't where they're struggling. It's defense. That defense was porous against Derek Carr. I mean, that's where the Ravens traditionally and should be good. And you're right, that Terrell Suggs hole is gaping.
The Houston Texans. The Houston Texans travelled to Carolina in a game that, again, most of us picked in favour of the away team. Cam Newton throwing two touchdown passes and somersaulting into the end zone for another score to lead them to a 24-17 victory over the Texans this weekend. Now, the only reason that I've got some optimism for the Texans, well, actually, the reasons are twofold. The first one is Arian Foster will be back in the next couple of weeks. He's back in practice. It might be too soon for him to be back in week three, but certainly we expect him to be back for week four. They desperately need him. They've already attempted an NFL-high 105 passes this season with an NFL-worst completion percentage of 50.5. That's not good news. They do not have a run game at the moment, but they are playing in the AFC South.
Well, yeah. If you were to flip these scores come the end of or flip the results come the end of week two and say that the Texans were 2-0 and the Panthers were 0-2, you wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I think you're fair. I think that's right. I do. I still struggle to give the Panthers too much love, although they're certainly ascending a lot of people's boards in terms of power rankings. People think they're going to be a lot better. I mean, the Panthers are on a 6-game winning streak.
Over the end of last,
in regular season games, obviously not including the playoffs. And they're allowing just 11.5 points per game in that time. So from a defensive point of view, they look great. I just think they're going to come up against better teams. And I think they'll struggle in that division. I think the Colts will get better, even though we've both Clancy and I suggested there were reasons to be worried there, mainly with the coaching. But the Panthers' next run of games, they go to the Saints this week, a team who we'll talk about next who are hurting. They're at the Bucks, a team who have looked more impressive than we thought. Then they're at the Seahawks, home to the Eagles, home to the Colts, home to the Packers. You know, actually, if they went down that stretch and won three of those six, and if they won none of those six, you wouldn't be surprised either way.
The massive positive for the Panthers is that Cam Newton has become the fastest player to 25 rushing touchdowns and passing touchdowns in the same game. I mean, this guy is a phenom. And the fact that he's back healthy, confident, he's almost as good as losing Kelvin Benjamin at the beginning of the season. The fact that you've got him back healthy is just so key for the Panthers that he will win you games on his own. And you know, again, in that terrible division and up and going up against the Saints, who are awful, I wouldn't bet against them being 3-0 this time next week.
Now let's get on to that game. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers travelled to New Orleans. The Saints were in the dome. They've got a great home record.
They'll be fine.
They're playing a team who were torn apart by a rookie quarterback last week. No worries at all. Maybe not the case. Jameis Winston passed for a touchdown and ran in for another as the Bucs held on to defeat the mistake-prone New Orleans Saints 26-19. Winston, just to give you those stats, number 4, intercepted twice and sacked 4 times in a losing NFL home debut. Just completely composed, basically untouched, completed 14 for 21 passes for 207 yards, not picked off. He did have one fumble, but the Saints couldn't cash in on it. And the Saints turned over the ball twice on fumbles with a running game that they were meant to be their strong point this year. They had 2 chances to tie it from the Buck 27 in the final 8 seconds. Both passes fell incomplete. Again, if you've wanted a quarterback in that situation in previous years, it was probably Drew Brees you want there. And I think there is real concern for the New Orleans Saints. Not being able to win at home and dropping points to the Buccaneers is something on its own. But on the field, a Jimmy Graham-less offense, and then Brees potentially out now for multiple games. Luke McCown is your quarterback, and you can't buy a win at the moment.
Oh, God.
Oh, New Orleans. What's gone wrong?
Sean
Payton's going to love being the head coach of the Cowboys next year.
Well, Gavin, would you prefer... No, I know what your answer would be, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Are you more optimistic about Chicago Bears or New Orleans Saints?
I'd still rather be a Saints fan.
Yeah, well, anyone would, but... even Bears fans would probably rather be a Saints fan. But given the way the optimism surrounding the New Orleans Saints, a lot of people had picked them as the winners of the NFC South, formerly the NFC disgrace. A lot of people picked the Chicago Bears to really, really struggle. So what is more surprising, the way the Bears are playing or the way that the Saints are playing?
The way that the Saints are playing is certainly more surprising because I think pre-season we fancied them to be the team to run the Falcons closest in that division, whereas the Bears we expected to be an utter joke. But I still think if one team's got more of a chance of going this season with the number one overall pick from those two, then certainly it's the Bears. And then they get to go and take Cardale Jones and suddenly have a quarterback, get rid of Jay Cutler. I don't care if you have to cut him and suck up all that money, just get that guy off your books. He's a joke.
Well, just because he hates you.
Yeah, that's part of it. Right, there are 2 more 0-2 teams we still need to talk about. I'm going to leave the worst for last. So for now, let's move on and talk about the Detroit Lions. Adrian Peterson, apparently, is a great football player, guys. Who knew? Hey, Minnesota, maybe you should have used him for more than 10 carries in San Francisco. Peterson had 192 total yards, and the Vikings rebounded from that rough opener for a 26-16 victory over the Lions on Sunday. Teddy Bridgewater played a good game for Minnesota after looking lost in that game against San Francisco. Threw one touchdown, ran for another, 4 for 18, 155, 3 yards, and key, no turnovers. Whereas Matthew Stafford, maybe still suffering from the injury, but certainly was erratic. Fell behind 14-0 early in the second quarter and netted just 38 yards rushing total for the team against a defense that gave up, 80 times that number just to Carlos Hyde alone earlier in the week? So, are the Lions a team that should be concerned? I seem to remember they were your pick for the North, weren't they, Ollie? Oh, no, wait. That was the Packers. Although, I'm sure somebody had the Lions for the North.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't me. And I don't think I even picked... I think I picked the Lions to make the wild card over the Vikings. I just think when you've got someone like Calvin Johnson there, and I do believe in Matt Stafford, although everything's pointing the opposite direction, I just think they've got enough there that you've got the, as I said, the last week, the defensive DNA from left over from Ndamukong Suh. I really
the defensive line just doesn't look as scary as last
it doesn't.
Season.
You're right; it doesn't look as scary.
Eye test wise, there are concerns there.
And I think it must have been a really good matchup against Oakland that Abdullah managed to make so many yards, score off his first touch. The offensive line doesn't look good at all. Joyt Bell Abdullah completely, Amir Abdullah completely shut down. But they are getting Calvin Johnson more and more into the game. And I think once we'll see in the next few weeks that Megatron is that
receiver. I'm sensing some optimism from you on the Lions.
I know, and it's wrong. I shouldn't have any optimism.
Let me just give you their next three games.
Okay, give it to me.
The Broncos, the Seahawks and the Cardinals.
Yeah, Broncos' defense is amazing. Seahawks will have bounced back and the Cardinals are on a roll. 0-5, the Detroit Lions. first pick fodder.
And then finally, let's talk about the clown car that is the Philadelphia Eagles. Tony Romo.
Whoa. There are more 0-2 teams.
Are there?
Yeah.
The Lions, the Saints, the Bears, the Texans, the Ravens, the Giants, the Colts.
We didn't talk about the Colts.
Yeah, we talked about the Colts with Clancy. I don't need to talk with them about...
Oh, I didn't hear that about Clancy. Okay, sorry. Carry on.
That's absolutely fine. That's not a problem. I'm leaving all that in as well. So, I mean, are the Philadelphia Eagles the most disappointing team in the league? Very possibly. DeMarco Murray, the reigning NFL rushing champion, nabbed just 2 yards on 13 carries. Sam Bradford had 3 turnovers, including an interception in the end zone as they lost against a not that great Dallas team 20-10 in Philadelphia. This was one of the worst games of football I've had the joy of watching in recent times. It was a complete and utter mess. I hated it. I really did hate it. We were going to talk about injured quarterbacks as well today, but we've kind of been working it in as we've gone along. The Cowboys lost Tony Romo. They brought out Brandon Whedon. And Brandon Whedon threw a 42-yard touchdown pass to Terrence Williams. That's bad news for that secondary that you spent money on this offseason, Philadelphia. I am concerned about a team that I absolutely loved going into this year.
Everyone loved. Everyone. I mean, people that managed to pick up Jordan Matthews or DeMarco Murray in fantasy. Simon Clancy, who wrote an article about Chip Kelly being the second Jesus, the next coming.
I think you've paraphrased that, but yeah, go on.
I definitely have. Everyone was on board with the Chip Kelly Philadelphia Eagles train, and they have let everybody down. They're terrible. Why are they so bad? If there's ever I wanted to dip into an interview with Simon Clancy and find out what he thinks about it, it's now, because they were awful against the Dallas defense, who isn't great. What's DeMarco Murray doing? He's on pace for about 85 yards in the season.
He did have one wonderful play where he caught the ball out on the right-hand side and leapt over the rushing corner to make up about 11-12-yard gain. But that is all. And to be fair to Bradford, the last the pick that came off Zach Ertz's hands was not his fault. He put that absolutely on the numbers. But the offensive line play is what's most concerning for me. It's an area which we thought might be the strength. It really wasn't. But equally, I have to say, I'm concerned for the Cowboys because we said before the season that if they lose either Romo or Dez, we had concerns for them. Well, guess what? They've now lost Romo for up to 8 weeks. They've still got Dez out for that same length of time. Brandon Whedon hasn't won a game that he started in over 3 years. He's 0-8 in that stretch. I'm concerned for the Cowboys as much as I am concerned for the Eagles. But the fact they've already got two wins, well done you. And this is why the Giants shouldn't be so concerned, because genuinely, I think the Giants could go on and win this division by default this year.
What, because the Eagles are that bad?
Yeah, well, because they look that bad at the moment. But we've said this now.
And you can't trust the Washington Football Club, and the Cowboys have got riddled with injuries. So it could be that if Eli manages to find the likes of Donnell, Cruz, if he ever comes back, Odell Beckham. I'm on board with that. I'm totally on board with
it. And the Eagles have got to go. The turnover happy Eagles next weekend travel to play the New York Jets in the Meadowlands, a Jets team who have 10 turnovers already this year, 31 points off those turnovers. It's a stat I've repeated this week already, but I don't care. It's ridiculous. The Eagles potentially going 0-3 to start the season could be a real shocker. And then having to go and play Washington, whose run defence has looked good and they've looked bad in the running game. So,
well, and also...
Oh, dear, Chip. Oh, dear, Philadelphia. What has become of you?
Can I just say that whilst we're talking the Eagles, I'm live Facebook chatting Simon Clancy, and I said to him, it's just a pity, Simon, that I didn't hear your thoughts on the terrible Philadelphia Eagles. And he replied, I would have ruined them. Kelly and Bradford, shambolic. Another ACL for Kiko. Dreadful. That's basically all the analysis from Clancy that you need on that. They have been shambolic. Another ACL for poor little Kiko. And the Eagles worry.
So that's our look at the 0-2 teams. We're mainly saying that the fact that only a tiny percentage of 0-2 teams have ever gone to the playoffs, that you should all be slightly concerned. But there are some of you who should definitely be more concerned than others. We've actually talked about all of the quarterback injuries already, Ollie, but we did say we were also going to talk about those teams who did well this weekend. We mentioned it at the top there is the most overused stat. The Raiders, Jaguars, Browns, Buccaneers and Washington ruining everyone's accumulators for the weekend. We've mentioned a few of those already, but let's just mention those couple that we haven't yet. The St. Louis Rams destroyed the Seattle Seahawks. Okay, they won by 3 points in overtime. But they went and played in Washington. We expected a good result. And instead, Washington's run defense turned up big and their running game turned up big. Matt Jones ran for 123 yards and two touchdowns. Kirk Cousins avoided turnovers against a very strong Rams defensive line. And Washington dominated for basically the whole first half, then held on against the Rams in the second half for a 24-10 win. Matt Jones, we had a lot of love for him in the offseason, particularly as like a fantasy flyer. He had a huge day. As Washington led 17-0 at halftime, the first time they shut out an opponent in a half since 2011, Ollie. Cousins, 23 for 27, 207 yards. Four-yard touchdown pass to Pierre Garçon. Look, all in all, Washington, really positive day.
Yeah, and that with Kirk Cousins under centre as well. They could be kind of sneaky in this division. If they keep clear of injuries, they keep that offensive line, which looked pretty decent against the Dolphins, and with Freddie Morris getting over 100 yards, and now with Matt Jones getting over 100 yards, they could be a sneaky pick in that NFC East.
Look, they'll come up against some much better teams, but their run defense is excellent, and so far their running game is excellent. Only eight players in the NFL have 150 rushing yards through the first two games. Freddie Morris and Matt Jones are two of those eight. So they've got a great 1-2 punch there. Changing to Kirk Cousins may have ended up being a genius move, even though the fact that in previous seasons, when RG3's been in, that's when Freddie Morris really has flourished. That's not been the case so far this year. Both of them have looked good. There is reason for optimism, Washington. Well done.
Yeah, there is, because Cousins, 23 out of 27, looking sharp. Those quick passes into Jordan Reed as the tight end, I really, really like. I think Jordan Reed could have a pretty big season. Matt Jones, Alfred Morris, as we said, they're running the ball more. Lots of quick plays, lots of slants and stuff like that from the passing game. Yeah, sneaky little option. I think other teams, and I know you said that they're going to come up against some more difficult teams, but I really think that Washington could be something decent this year. is quietly hysterical.
Yeah, that's quite. Let's go with something a little quietly hysterical.
Yeah, that's quietly.
There you go, quietly hysterical.
Yeah, quietly. Hashtag quietly hysterical.
I mean, realistically, we talked already about the other teams, the Jaguars, the
great for the Jaguars, the by the way.
Yeah, really pleased for them. The first time they've not gone 0-2 in the last five seasons.
And Penn State's Alan Robinson. We are...
Penn State?
Yeah, carry on.
Is there any reason for optimism in Cleveland, or did they just beat a terrible Titans team? They won 28-14. Johnny Manziel threw a 60-yard touchdown pass to Travis Benjamin, who, by the way, Travis Benjamin has 50% of all of Cleveland's receiving yards this year. He has been ridiculous so far. A clutch 50-yarder with 2:52 left. This was a game that we were all so high on the Titans after their win in Tampa Bay that we got overexcited, I think. And I actually just think this was two quite bad teams going up against each other, and Cleveland came out the better of two quite bad teams.
I said before on our preview show that we needed the Browns' the rushing game to step up, and Isaiah Crowell did. One touchdown, 72 yards. Duke Johnson, 43 yards. The thing that worries me about the Browns is... that those two big Johnny Manziel passes, passing touchdowns, plus the one from last week as well, they've just been almost Hail Marys.
Bombs. Okay. Travis Benjamin, sorry, just to give those stats, is 4 out of 5 touchdowns and 51% of all their receiving yards so far. But those have mostly been, as you say, on down the field bombs. So maybe let's not get too overexcited in terms of for Tennessee. Marcus Mariota, we were calling him the second coming last week. This week, 7 sacks, 3 fumbles, 2 of which were lost, and a 29.7 total QBR. Welcome to the NFL, Marcus. You're going to probably have more games like this.
Yeah, by all accounts, Marcus didn't quite see those sacks coming. I think 5 out of the 7 sacks were his fault. Not really realizing the pressure, not getting the ball away, chucking the ball. Sometimes you just got to chuck the ball away, and take the penalty of either intentional crowding or no receiver in the area, so that you don't have that demoralizing sack, which is demoralizing for both yourself and for the offensive line. He didn't have, apart from not really recognizing being under pressure, he didn't have that bad a game. No interceptions, still 3 for a touchdown or 2. The Titans aren't a good team, and if they finish anywhere near 400, I think that would be a good season for the Titans.
Tom Brady.
Oh, sweet Tom. He's amazing.
In pure FU mode. We talked about the chance he was going to come into the season that way. So far, through 2 games, he has 7 touchdown passes and no interceptions. That's his best first 2 games of a season in his career. Threw for 466 yards, the second most of his career, and 3 touchdowns in a 40-32 win over the Bills. A game that none of us necessarily saw being a shootout. Julian Edelman, maybe I need to start eating my words on him, scored 2 touchdowns, and the Patriots needed to stave off a fourth quarter rally after building a 37-13 lead. They looked absolutely dominant up until that point. But the Bills, look, Buffalo, let's not get too downhearted. You got outcoached this weekend, but just to go back to that, I've the same stat I've just used, Tom Brady having 7 touchdown passes and no interceptions in his first 2 games. That's also the exact same ratio he has against the Bills in their last 3 meetings over the past 2 seasons. Everyone else in that same period, considering Tom Brady is 7-0, is 14 touchdown passes to 21 interceptions against this Bills defense. They did not have a good showing. They got outcoached by Belichick. It's the reason that they've consistently been the best team in the AFC Beast. But I still have plenty of love for Buffalo.
I know you've got plenty of love for Buffalo, and that's why I'm going to throw this at you. Brady threw the ball 59 times. Okay, completed 38, compared to rushing it just 16 times. They were Belichick completely outcoached. Rex Ryan admitted it in the post-match press conference, said, look, I was done, and he's been done time and time again by Belichick. I want to put this as well to you, Will Gavin. Is there a better trio of quarterback, tight end and wide receiver than Brady, Gronkowski, Julian Edelman? And I want you to eat your words about Edelman, because I think he...
Look, I didn't say Julian Edelman was going to be bad. I said Julian Edelman was going to be good not great. I think people got overexcited. I was probably wrong. It looks like Julian Edelman's going to be great. It's difficult when people talk about trips, they generally mean a quarterback, running back, wide receiver rather than a quarterback, wide receiver, tight end.
Well, I've flipped it up. I've changed it.
I'm not going to lie. They probably are the best trio in that situation in the league, but I'm giving that purely with the caveat that Julian Edelman is being dragged up into that rank by having the very best tight end in the league and the guy who right now is the very best quarterback in the league.
I think you'll find that Julian Edelman is Brady's go-to man on third downs. He's Brady's go-to man when times are tough.
When the chips are down and when Brady needs lifting up, Julian is there. I get it, mate. All right, calm yourself down. Whilst Aaron Rodgers is the man that I love more than any other in the league, and I think Aaron Rodgers is in that is in that period of time where he's doing stuff which no other quarterback's doing.
Mate.
He's making plays which are just absolutely insane. He's throwing across his body in situations where no other quarterback could. He's getting ridiculous power off short. He looks ridiculous and he looks insane, but the best situational quarterback and the guy who's playing to probably above the level that the team that we maybe expected in terms of this offense is Tom Brady. He's insane so far. Right, the last game of the weekend. I have no idea why we've left this till last.
It's like match of the day. Sometimes you leave that really good game so people have to sit through the dross. And that's what they've done up until this point on at Gridiron Show. They've set up. They've waited for this.
This isn't a good game.
Yeah. Okay.
It was a terrible game, Ollie.
It was a great game. It was a great game for people that love Antonio Brown, people that love D'Angelo Williams, people that love Ben Roethlisberger. There's not many of those.
I came crashing down to earth this weekend. It's Ben Roethlisberger. Passed for 369 yards and 3 touchdowns. D'Angelo Williams tied a team record with 3 rushing scores, and the Steelers overwhelmed the San Francisco 49ers 43-18. Steelers converted a pair of 2-point attempts in the first half. They obviously really don't trust Josh Scobie, but it's interesting to see. That's a nice thing to see from the game. I've been encouraging teams to go for 2 more often ever since we started doing this podcast. I love teams going for 2. I obviously didn't love it in this situation. And Antonio Brown, you already said it, 9 passes, 195 yards, made our secondary look like a complete and utter joke after they'd been so good against Minnesota. And I think this is the season you're going to get from the 49ers. I think you're going to get, it's going to be feast or fallow. You're going to have games where the defense shows up, where the offense puts stuff together, where Carlos Hyde has a big day, and you're going to have games where they're going to get absolutely trounced. I don't see them in that many tight games, basically. Yeah, Steelers offensively were unbelievably good. And actually, this is a game where, admittedly, a lot of it was in junk time, but Kaepernick still threw 33 completions, 335 yards, 2 touchdowns. On the offensive side, he still had a great game, and the Steelers secondary still looks not very good. But if you go on the road and put 18 points on the Steelers, you're thinking, oh, we've done all right here, and then you go and concede 43. What
is
he doing?
Is Kaepernick sneaky good this year?
I think he's sneaky better.
Okay. I'll calm myself down. Josh Scobie, the only man to have 2 missed PATs.
In the history of time?
In the same season. No, probably not in the same season, but so far this season. And the fact that the Steelers went for 2-point conversions on their first 2 touchdowns was vilified? No. What's the word?
Was justified
because
yeah, there we go.
Was justified. Yeah, justified because Scobie missed his next PAT.
Yeah.
So he's a terrible person. No, he's not a terrible person. He's a terrible kicker. the Pittsburgh look a totally different team when they're not going up against Brady and Belichick, and the fact that it's pretty much equal when it comes to passing or rushing. It's very difficult to defend against, and I think the 49ers, okay, we know that they're not a great team, but when you've got that dual threat of D'Angelo Williams, who has looked fantastic so far this season, and Antonio Brown with Ben Roethlisberger, I don't think there's too much shame in being shamed how you were.
Right. We've gone through all the weekend's games. I think we've given a good view of every team and given everyone a fair shout. Just to quickly look forward to Thursday night, Redskins against the Giants. I think we've talked about both these teams in some decent length, but the Giants look so far have looked good against the run. not so great on offense, given up to 10 points in the fourth quarter in two games, as we've said. No teams running for as many yards as Washington, but they look very good on the ground against the run as well. It's a short week. It's a short travel, admittedly, because it's a divisional game. I'm looking at it, and I'm favouring the Giants here. After last weekend, I don't feel confident picking anything.
Well, the fact that Giants are at home in an evening game, I think, kind of swings it their way. But the way the things have been going so far this season, I'm going to pick the Washington Football Club. Because
why not? Exactly. That's a perfectly valid reason, sir. Right.
It has been so far this year. look at this. This week, those teams that won that really shouldn't have won. Why not go for the Washington Football Club? Stuff the Giants.
Right. In weeks where we do more preparation, I'm going to go through and look at people's tweets before I come into the studio. Because instead I tweet something out and then I read through them while we're live. And a lot of these would have made sense earlier on. But let's go through it anyway. Tom Knight tweeted us to say, look, my bold prediction for last week didn't prove that bad. Just 6 yards difference, but definitely a domination. He claimed that Fitzmagic would outthrow Andrew Luck and that the Jets would dominate the Colts 35-10. Well, he was right about one thing. Outthrew Andrew Luck, and they did beat the Colts, not by as many points, but that, yeah, it was a good shout. Well done, Tom. Adam Barton asked us how many of the 0-2 teams will make the playoffs. Well, we went through all of those teams already, but Ollie, just very quickly, if you had to make a pick from those 0-2 teams, how many of them can make the playoffs and which ones? I'll tell you who I think. I think the Seahawks, the Colts, and the Giants still make the playoffs from those teams.
Still make the playoffs?
Yeah, I think it's going to be all. I think it's going to be three of them because the Eagles stink and the Cowboys have got all their players injured. I think the Colts play in the AFC South, and I think the Seahawks will get through in a wild card.
I think only the Colts will make the playoffs.
You don't think the Seahawks will make the playoffs? Incredible! I think
they're obviously they're going to beat the Bears. Hysterical.
Sorry, carry on.
Obviously, they'll beat the Bears, but I think the Rams have got the Indian sign over them. Cardinals look really, really good, and I don't think they'll sneak in on the old wild card. I think the NFC North, maybe the Lions might make it. So I think the NFC North will have the two wild card spaces.
While we've got the dropout, Hysterical. Josh Hunter reckons the Jets will break the all-time turnover record. I love it, Josh. Stewart says that Luck has carried the Colts since he arrived. Two bad games and Pagano throws him under the bus. Hashtag wanker. Stewart, I appreciate your sentiment towards Andrew Luck. Nobody has been more loving of that man than I have over the last 2 years. But over the last 3 years, God, 3 years, 4 years, blimey. But he was bad at the weekend and that team is going to struggle. Jimmy Football gets in touch with his own hysteria, saying the Jets will be 4-0 after London. Hysterical. I don't think that's hysterical, James. Yeah, I think the Jets will be 4-0 after London. I'll put that out on the board now.
Yeah, could happen. Could happen.
Tennessee Titans ask again of the Colts as a contender next year. It seems to be a lot of people want to talk about that. Richard Walker, are the Panthers the worst team with the best record, considering they're 2-0? Probably, yes.
Well, you say that, but yeah, okay.
But of the 2-0 teams, they would probably be the team that I'd put bottom of a 2-0 power ranking.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Adam again asks, which is worse, the NFC South, formerly known as the NFC Disgrace, the AFC South, or the NFC East? Look, if I was in a vacuum, in a talent-based vacuum, I'd say the AFC South.
Yep, I agree. There's only two really good players in the AFC South.
But if I was looking at the play so far this year and the injury concerns so far this year, I'm going to say the NFC East.
Yeah, again, synergy, mate. I agree with you.
We've got the AFC Beast and the NFC Least. Talk about AFC East hype. It's the same every year. Hashtag hysteria. That's not hysteria, Simon Noble, because it's exactly what I said in our preview podcast after Tom Brady got reinstated. I said they're going to win it again, and it's going to be my biggest disappointment of the season. Devastating.
I've got nothing to add to that.
Devin Foxall thinks Washington will win the NFC East. Let's get hysterical.
Whoa! I don't think so. I don't think so. I've said that it could happen. It could happen.
Ollie Hunter is on that bandwagon.
I am.
Alan M says, hysterical. Brandon Whedon will keep the Cowboys in contention. Unbelievable. Adam gets saying, having gone 6-10 in the picking game, mate, two games better than I did. Should we assume all games are random results from now on? I might just pick the home team in every game for the rest of this year.
That could happen.
Yeah, okay, good. And Alex Metcalf reckons that James Jones is going to catch at least one touchdown every game for the rest of the season.
Do you know what? That's a good shout. Although he only caught one ball against the Seattle Seahawks, but it was for that 29-yard touchdown. Although there was that other one that was chalked off quite rightly because James Jones was in the chalk.
Oh, God, we've got another one thinking Washington will win the NFC East. Martin, with Romo and Dez's injuries and Giants and Eagles being poor, Washington will win the NFC East. Not even playing the drop again. It's disgraceful.
it's NFC South.
Martin also asked us who's been more disappointing so far, the Colts or the Eagles?
Eagles.
Easily. That's a tough call. I'm very disappointed with both. And Robert Kopp asked us, Brady in his prime or Rodgers now?
Is Brady in his prime now?
Very good question, Ollie. Let's leave that one hanging in the air. Look, we've had a good week. It's been a lot of fun. And we'll have another show later in the week. We're going to do our week 3 preview on Friday morning. And we'll have our chat with the Dolphins vice executive player personnel. I'll get his title right by the end of the
bloody
week.
Bloody hell.
Formerly of the Jets, Mike Tannenbaum. He had some really interesting stuff to say about the team and about his time at the Jets, which we know ended so badly. And so that was a really good chat we've had with him. So that'll come up later in the week. Ollie, is there anything more you'd like to add?
No. How about you? Is there anything more that you would like to add?
That's so bizarre. I'm currently feeling a little worse for wear. Still, I just really want to say, I know a lot of our listeners are kind of over the age of 30, maybe even older. They remember the NFL of the 80s. Do hangovers get this bad once you breach 30 all the time, or is it just specifically when you have a really heavy night?
It's when you have a really heavy night, and I know why you've had a heavy night.
We had a brilliant night.
It was such a great night.
Coast to coast on Sunday night. We went down and watched the NFL games there up by Wembley. It's not necessarily somewhere we're going to go every week because of the location, but as a place to watch the games after the Wembley games, I think it's going to be superb. And we ate a lot.
Food was amazing.
We drank a lot.
The beer was amazing. Yeah.
We got incredibly merry. And I
fell in love.
Look, the night ended with Matt Sherry being sick in my toilet at about 5 a.m.
Yeah, no, stuff that. I fell in love.
Holly.
Yeah, sweet Holly.
And Sam Howitt was tweeting with her, I noticed, when we got home. So you weren't, you weren't the only one. He's treading on your turf there, Ollie.
She's on Twitter. I'm going to find her right now. Live finding of Twitter stalking.
Live
as we
stalking.
Speak.
So otherwise, we'll have that show coming up later in the week. Please do keep following us at Gridiron. Give us your iTunes reviews. Do check out Sports Travel Tours. We were talking about the game in Green Bay and about that ridiculous Aaron Rodgers record this year. They're doing a fantastic trip out to Green Bay, doing a long weekend, catching a college game, a high school game and the Packers game, tailgating with former players. It's going to be absolutely brilliant. So go to Sports Travel Tours, travel for sports fans, by sports fans, Google it, or go to sportstraveltours.com for all the information about them. Have you finished your Twitter stalking?
I found her. Wow.
I definitely need to get off the line before it gets a little bit raunchy up in here. So, from myself, from Ollie Hunter, and from everybody at Gridiron, thank you for listening. This has been The Gridiron Show.
Ho, 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 it's magic, you know. Never believe it can snow. It's magic, you know. Put it into the throwzone. Never makes mistakes. Never use a plaything. This just gives the other team a warning. He's got a beard like Barry White. Future's looking real bright. Fits his face all squished up in his helmet. Ho, 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 it's magic.
real nice. Stevie looks like Jerry Rice. Next year we might even see a game.